This podcast is brought to you by DIA, the trusted global neutral forum for healthcare product development professionals. DIA, driving insights to action.
The growing vision of precision medicine places new focus on the patients participating in clinical trials for new drugs and on the patients for whom these new drugs are intended, and importantly, on the differences between these two groups. Who determines what constitutes a representative and appropriately diverse population for a clinical trial, and how? I am Alberto Grignolo, editor of the IA Global Forum. Today, I am speaking with Dr. Sam Oh, director of epidemiology, asthma collaboratory, at the University of California, San Francisco School of Medicine. Dr. Oh is a featured panelist on the Diamond session that will explore the question, does diversity matter in clinical trials, at our DIA 2017 Global Annual Meeting in Chicago in June. Thank you for joining us today, Dr. Oh, and welcome.
Good morning. Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
We often hear that patients participating in clinical research are not diverse enough to represent the general population. What is the scope and extent of this problem, if it is a problem? And do you think this is true across all types of clinical research?
From our research, what we've done in our field, which is asthma, it's a respiratory disease, and we looked at NIH-funded studies conducted since 1993, and I'll explain a little bit about that, why that year is important. But from 1993 to 2013, over that period, we found that less than 5% of NIH-funded studies of respiratory diseases included populations of non-European descent to sufficient numbers of these minority populations to actually make some type of between group comparisons. So underrepresentation of minorities is a big problem with respiratory NIH-funded studies. And it's not unique to that field as well. There was another study that was published by Moon Chen and colleagues from University of California, Davis, and they looked at cancer clinical trials. And what they found was that only 2% of cancer studies included enough minorities to provide useful information about how a treatment or a drug or a disease is affected by a person's racial or genetic ancestry. So these issues of diversity and representation are not unique to any given field, but seem to be fairly widespread in the field of biomedical research in general and also with respect to clinical trials.
What are some of the causes of this gross imbalance, if I may call it that?
It's multifactorial. The reasons why minorities are underrepresented have a number of potential explanations, going back from early government studies that intentionally withheld useful treatments from minorities, targeting and exploiting certain populations, all the way to the individual, an individual investigator or researcher, just not knowing the benefits of including diverse populations in research and how increasing diversity is not just socially fair, it's not just economically just, but it also leads to better science. Earlier, I talked about the year 1993 and why that's an important year. That was the year that President Clinton signed into law the NIH Revitalization Act, which mandated that the NIH increase participation of women and minorities in biomedical research. That was a great effort on the government to acknowledge and to encourage participation in research, but really that law didn't have much enforcement. It lacked the teeth to increase diversity. And that's part of what our research found, was that since 1993, since the year the Congressional Act was passed, the proportion of respiratory studies that were funded by NIH included less than 5% of minorities. So there's still a long way to go. We're trying to change the direction of a large research enterprise, and it doesn't turn on a dime like an oil tanker would not turn, like a motorboat would. So there's a lot of inertia in the system. And then also, there are just so many opportunities for minorities to participate, from being research participants to conducting research themselves, all the way up to being a peer reviewer of research. And what we see is that at every step of this process, minorities tend to be underrepresented, whether it's as a participant or in the pipeline of biomedical investigators and trainees, or at the decision-making level at journals, at NIH study panels that get to review the research. So there are many steps in this process where we can intervene to increase diversity.
Would you say that minorities have traditionally been perhaps reluctant to participate in clinical research out of a series of concerns, combined with the fact, as you've explained, that clinical researchers have not reached out to minority communities? Have those two factors basically contributed to the state of affairs of underrepresentation of minorities in clinical research as patients?
Yes, those factors definitely contribute, but they don't explain all of it. One example might be holding patient recruitment hours during the work week, 9 to 5, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. The people who can afford to take time off to enter the recruitment clinics at those hours may not necessarily be the people that we're trying to recruit if we're trying to recruit a diverse population. So by extending recruitment hours into the weekend or making recruitment hours available outside of 9 to 5, providing childcare, maybe providing some food if somebody brings their child with them, they may not be able to afford a babysitter, and just acknowledging and accommodating the needs of the populations that you're trying to recruit. And on top of that, people tend to identify more readily with people who look like themselves or speak their language or are at the very least familiar with their cultures. So if you're trying to recruit diverse populations, it helps to have recruiters and investigators and research staff who are culturally aware and culturally competent with respect to the communities that they're trying to reach.
You are beginning to already answer my next question, which is, how can researchers achieve appropriate diversity in clinical trials without enrolling huge numbers of patients and spending a fortune in doing so?
I've been asked, am I advocating that every research study include a certain minimum proportion of minorities? And the answer to that is no. I think, in part, our recruitment efforts should be driven by what we know, and also, more importantly, what we don't know. Where are the knowledge gaps in the etiology of a certain disease? And sometimes disease and medications affect populations differently, and it's often we won't know this, and we won't benefit from understanding the disease process better if we don't recruit these populations. So I think our recruitment efforts should acknowledge the proportion of people affected by the condition that we're trying to research. So for example, if we're looking at a disease, let's say it's type 1 diabetes, and we know that certain populations are more affected by this, or perhaps there are great health disparities or health outcome disparities with respect to type 1 diabetes. I think it's important to understand that that one single research study will not be able to answer all these questions, but as a whole, as a research portfolio around type 1 diabetes, I think there should be good representation along the spectrum of disease and also along the spectrum of those who are affected by it.
While it's clear that you're not advocating that every clinical research study include a proportion of minorities, you seem to be saying that inclusion of diverse populations and minority populations should be disease specific. So are you advocating, in essence, that when planning a clinical study, researchers ought to ask themselves, how should the allocation of patients to this study reflect the general population for this particular disease?
In some ways, but backing up a little bit, the U.S. population is about 40% minority, and in less than one generation, we're going to flip so that there is no majority group. We're going to be actually a minority-majority country. But if only 2% of cancer studies and less than 5% of pulmonary studies have studied enough minorities to provide useful information, what we're doing is we're missing half of the scientific pie by not studying minorities. And from an economic and kind of a fairness perspective, a growing proportion of Americans aren't fully benefiting from the medical and scientific discoveries that they are funding through their tax dollars. So the important thing is that when we study diverse populations, we understand the basis of disease better. So for example, there is a cholesterol-lowering drug that's called a PCSK9 inhibitor. It works by interfering with the LDL cholesterol metabolism pathway. And that drug was only discovered because an astute clinician noticed that a patient, an African-American woman, had incredibly low levels of LDL cholesterol. And when they studied this even more, they realized that this woman had a particular mutation in a gene that led to better understanding of the molecular pathways of cholesterol metabolism. And researchers were able to develop a molecule that inhibits a particular gene. And lo and behold, everybody, whether you're white, you're black, purple, or blue, can benefit from this drug, which was discovered in an African American and missed in white populations because the prevalence of this mutation is much higher in African Americans and very rare in white populations.
So there's a clear benefit in taking a broader view when conducting clinical research and including populations that we now call minorities, but as you mentioned, might become, you know, very large minorities or even majorities. There's a great deal to be learned by looking at diverse populations, isn't there?
Exactly. And when we do diverse science, when we have diversity in the people who are being studied, when we have diversity in those who are doing the science, you really do much better science. So in essence, diversity is better science.
Now, going back to my question of how can one do this without enrolling huge numbers of patients? That would cost a small fortune or a large fortune. What are some practical ways to look at diversity and capture lots of relevant information without breaking the budget?
These are practical challenges, and there's no easy answer to this. I think one thing to keep in mind is not to have a small number of diversities just for the sake of including diversities, including minorities. Pardon me. It's important that we have enough minorities to make some clinically or scientifically meaningful inferences from these subpopulations within our studies. And ways to do that might be to increase targeted recruiting in minority populations. One thing that we have found in our research group to be incredibly, I don't want to say useful, because useful so understates how important it is. One thing we've found to be critical in recruiting minority populations is that we have recruiters who are very well tied into the populations that we're trying to recruit. And you don't necessarily have to look like the population you want, but you should at least be very sensitive and culturally aware. And one of our recruiters, she is this short, white, red-haired woman, and she has been our best recruiter in our African-American populations. So just having a recruitment effort that is culturally aware, I think that's one thing. Another thing is at the political or at the administrative level, for NIH to really start putting teeth into the legislation that was signed in 1993, to have study sections and grant reviewers actually start emphasizing the importance of recruiting diverse populations. Right now, the NIH Revitalization Act is more of a checkbox that we need to make an overture to, kind of a superficial overture. But really, what would be helpful is if recruitment of diverse populations is the norm, it's the default that the scientific community should be held accountable to, and then justify scientifically why this particular study may not be able to recruit minority populations.
For many years, the FDA in the United States has required that new drug applications include subset analyses by gender, by race, by age, and by disease condition. Do you think or expect that FDA might want to look at subset analyses by minority groups, and in such instances, a number of minority groups for specific disease conditions? Would that be a good idea? Would it be helpful to the public health?
I believe so. When we're talking about FDA and specifically drugs that are used to treat diseases, it's well known and well documented that a given drug will not affect or produce the same effects across all people. Women react differently than men to analgesics. Drug response varies also by age and also by race. And some of these drug responses can be fatal. So for example, the drug that prevents blood clotting, clopidogrel, also known as Plavix, it's a prodrug. It is taken in by the body and it needs to be activated by a liver enzyme so that it can actually do its work. But in Asians, approximately 50% of Asians lack the version of the enzyme that can activate the drug. And up to 77% of Pacific Islanders have the same mutation that will not allow them to benefit from clopidogrel. So essentially, if you're Asian or Pacific Islander, you have a 1 in 2 or a 3 in 4 chance of taking a placebo. And that's because drug response varies in this case by a particular genetic polymorphism or genetic mutation that tends to vary by race and ethnicity. So if we're to have a better regulation of minority participants, we can actually discover these adverse drug reactions or drugs that reach suboptimal therapeutic levels and then understand the disease process better. So for example, why does this drug not reach therapeutic levels in a certain group? It's because of XYZ mechanism. And as we study that mechanism better, we can potentially develop better therapeutic targets or have a better understanding of disease etiology.
The age of precision medicine, of course, has ushered in a new way of thinking about how to tailor specific drugs to specific populations, including specific individuals. But as we think about the existing drugs on the market today that were not developed in the age of precision medicine, when we think about diversity in clinical research of new therapies, they must. But the historical lack of diversity in clinical research may imply that existing therapies may not be all that suitable for the health needs of a highly diverse population. Are we living now in a difficult era where the existing therapies actually are poorly adapted to the highly diverse population, such as the U.S. population?
Precision medicine, as you mentioned, it's about getting the right treatments to the right people at the right time, providing them the right medication in the right amount, taking into account our individual differences in genetics, environment, life histories, and so on. And to me, that sounds a lot like health equity, where we provide people the right amount of health in the amount that they need at the right time. So precision medicine has a tremendous potential for bringing better health to a wide breadth of people. It's important that as we move forward with precision medicine, that we don't leave people behind. That since precision medicine has such amazing potential to bring improved quality of life and healthcare to everybody, it's important that we don't create economic minorities or exacerbate existing health disparities simply because of the fact that we are leaving behind people who may not have the means to benefit or provide themselves with access to healthcare providers and research benefits with respect to precision medicine.
Do you have any perspective on the future and how to include more diverse populations in clinical research in a way that's balanced, productive, and helpful to the public health?
Increasing diversity in clinical trials and biomedical research, it's a real challenge. It's a big challenge, but these challenges aren't insurmountable. It's not something that we can solve overnight, but we can make some simple changes. We can increase funding for NIH, and I'm happy to hear that NIH for the current fiscal year actually got a boost in their budget, and we need to, as citizens of this country, lobby, petition, be in touch with our representatives so that policies for enrolling women, enrolling minorities are actually legislated and have teeth so that they can be enforced. NIH is also examining how scientists get funded. We know that there's a disparity in white scientists and non-white scientists and how they get funded, and that leads to a disparity in the representation of minority scientists in research. We can also make changes at the journal levels. For example, journals should require that all study populations report the racial breakdown of their study populations. It's a simple change, but you would be surprised at how many studies are published without mentioning these basic characteristics of the groups. So we have differences in individual differences in genetics, environments, life histories, and we can leverage this rich diversity to our advantage. So when we study diverse populations, we not only understand the basis of disease better, but we can discover better therapies.
Well, thank you very much for sharing your time and insights today, Dr. Oh. We much appreciate your contribution.
Well, thank you so much. It was a pleasure.
For DIA Global Forum, I am Alberto Grignolo.
To learn more about this topic, visit us online at diaglobal.org.